Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins is brought to you by James H. Brown and Associates, Alberta injury lawyers. Go to jameshbrown.com.
Hey, Queens of the Stone Age.
Good band.
This is No One Knows, right?
That's right.
Yeah, this is a good one.
What's the title? No One Knows.
Songs for the Deaf. That was the album.
Great album.
That's probably one of my top 10 favorite albums of all time. Well, it's Friday. We'll take requests, by the way, for songs coming back from break. Again, guitar rock, no naughty words. Or Taylor Swift, since I was listing off Taylor Swift songs with Chelsea Bird.
You got a lot farther with that than I thought you were going to.
Well,
so kudos.
I'm pretty diverse musically. Actually, I'm not.
That's
totally not true.
Like, that's a factual statement. Anyway.
Well, yeah, Taylor Swift she's pretty big.
Yes.
I thought Chelsea would get more than three Def Leppard songs. And then, like, she's such a troll. So then she leaves work and she texts me, "Oh, I forgot a couple Def Leppard songs." And I'm like, okay. And she sends me Thunderstruck and Detroit Rock City. Of course, knowing that those aren't Def Leppard songs, just to try to irritate me.
I had to sit down and expand her mind with the classic rock stuff I see in the afternoons. But hey, things are going well, so it's all good. So,
Sabres are leading the Devils 5-2 late in the second period. And the Blue Jackets and Islanders are tied 2-2. That's also late in the second period. Coyotes and Avalanche start at 7 o'clock. Bunch of games coming up tomorrow. The Kings are going to be in action. Seattle plays Nashville. Sharks play the Flames. That's a matinee. Another big one for Calgary. And, of course, the Oilers and Golden Knights on 6:30 Ched Faceoff Show at 6:30. And the puck will drop at 8 o'clock. NCAA basketball tournament. I didn't give the scores last weekend because there are so many games. Well, I guess when Steve Sir was on, we talked about Fairleigh Dickinson upsetting number one Purdue, a 16-1. But now we're later in the bracket, and you know, these could be pivotal for people winning their pools or, you know, getting some money or not. Midwest region. About 4 minutes into the second half, number 5 Miami leading number 1 Houston, 51-45. And how about this? 3 minutes left, number 5 San Diego State leading number 1 Alabama, 64-55. Alabama, not just the number 1 seed in the South, they're the number 1 team in the entire NCAA. So if both Alabama and Houston lost, there would be no number 1 seeds in the Elite Eight. I don't know if that's ever happened before. There have been no number one seeds in the Final Four. I just looked it up. Only two Final Fours ever did not include a number one seed. I don't think that there's ever been an Elite Eight without a number one seed.
Could you imagine the amount of brackets that were busted or that would be busted?
Yeah, like the one dude in, like, you know, Central Arkansas that took all upsets. He's thrilled right now.
By the way, how about Gonzaga last night over UCLA?
I watched the end of that game.
That was insane.
I watched the last few minutes. So UCLA was ahead. Gonzaga came back. They were ahead. UCLA, I'm trying to remember the sequence here. They made a 3-pointer to go up by one.
Mm-hmm.
And then Gonzaga brings the, I think there was about 15 seconds left. Gonzaga brings the ball up, and I'm thinking, okay, maybe they'll try to shoot right at the end to win it. And the guard brought the ball up, handed it off. I'm sorry, I don't know the players' names, to the other Gonzaga guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was halfway, he might have been closer to the center line than he was the 3-point line.
He took a shot from the S on the March Madness logo.
He was standing on the March Madness logo, yeah, which comes out of the center circle.
Yeah.
And he fires up this three and makes it. Like, just, like, talk about an unexpected shot. I guess UCLA is not thinking they have to defend 10 to 12 feet back from the 3-point line.
Right.
But that's what makes this tournament great. As I've often said, every game is a game 7. It's got the built-in drama of the seeds blatantly telling you who the favorite is and who everybody thinks is going to win. And then you got wild finishes. And I guess Gonzaga's been a big school, been a prominent school for about 20 years now. But,
well, both of them have been.
Yeah, UCLA's, well, I mean, they're not as good as when John Wooden was coaching.
No, but, of course.
That goes back a ways, but anyway, yeah, that was quite a finish. Of course, I'm just double checking something here. I'm double checking where Marcus Camby played. Oh, he was UMass. Remember we interviewed Marcus Camby during the Oilers preseason?
We did, yes.
Yeah. Anyway, yes, that was a thrilling finish last night. We might be in for a couple more here today. 780-496-0063. So for fun, give me your ultimate Oilers forward line, but you have to take one player from the five Stanley Cup era, one player from 1991 to 2014, and one player from 2015 to now. Is anybody participating in this mad game?
Oh, yes.
It's madness.
It is madness. Absolutely. DJ texts in with his line. He'd go Gretzky, Waite, and McDavid.
Okay. Pretty good.
Mike's got Gretzky, Smith, and McDavid.
I guess it's pretty obvious to take, even though I said
I guess McDavid,
without Gretzky and McDavid. I'm kind of doing that just to be a little argumentative. I mean, you got two of the top five players in the history of hockey. I guess we can put them on the same line and see what happens. Yeah.
So this is an interesting one from Joe, though. He sent this in.
I hope it has Zdeno Seeger.
I fought about Zdeno Seeger for mine. Don't worry.
Okay, that's question number two. Give me your ultimate Oilers line, but it has to include Zdeno Seeger.
Okay, sure. Joe texts in, and he has Gretzky, of course. He's got McDavid, of course. But then he's put Chris Pronger on the line as well.
He's putting Chris Pronger at forward.
At forward.
Okay. Well, that's a little bit off the assignment. No, maybe he was thinking 3-on-3 overtime. But I think I said forward line.
Yes.
But, yeah, 3-on-3 overtime, that would be pretty good. Gretzky,
well,
McDavid,
imagine?
And Pronger. Yeah. Well, that's another fun. I'm really starting to ramble here, Kellen. Wow. I did have stuff planned, but now we're just going everywhere. To me, one of the most interesting what-if topics when we talk about hockey, and I'm actually not going to go to the Oilers for this. I'm going to go to another team that had one of the all-time greats on it. What if they had 3-on-3 overtime when Lemieux and Yager were on the Penguins?
Oh.
And, you know, Coffey or who they had, Larry Murphy. I can't remember the exact timing of all of them, but, you know, that's pretty interesting to me, too. Because I just, as great as Gretzky and Messi and Anderson and Curry was, I think Lemieux and Yager in that setting might have even been more automatic. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that would be just could you imagine just watching that amount of talent out on the ice? If you took them from their prime, like, let's say 95, 96, Connor would still be chasing the record from that team if that's the case.
I just think that's a really fun what if. Like, if those, as great as those Oilers teams were, and of course we're in Edmonton, so I'm not detracting anything from those guys.
Right.
I just think, is there any buddy you'd like to see play 3-on-3 overtime, I might take Mario first.
Mm-hmm.
All right, anyway, what else is it coming in?
Yakishev made me laugh at this one. Luke Gazdick, George Laroque, and Dave Semenko, you didn't say what the line had to be best at.
That's
good point.
That's a very good point, Yakishev. You've found the loophole again. We got to get tape William Shatner yelling, Yakishev!
Excellent. Right on.
Yeah, it's just like, what is he talking about?
I'm speechless after that. That's unreal. We've got another anonymous text coming in with McDavid, Curry, and Guerin. Toughness, defensive responsibility, and toughness.
Well, I think McDavid would be the speed.
Yes.
Okay.
Well,
say that one again.
Okay.
David,
so,
Curry.
And Guerin. Bill Guerin.
Oh, that's an interesting one, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
And then Coach Al texts in with another tough guy line. So he's got Semenko, Laroque, and Milan Lucic.
These are pretty interesting. I love how people find a way to take the assignment to a new place. I do appreciate that. I find it funny. Okay.
And that's all we got for the line combinations for now. But I got a text in from Marfis in response to Sandy's comment from last night.
Oh, right. Sure.
So says, hi, Reed. Sandy, the caller, has to realize it's a team sport and the coach will make lines to give the team the best chance of winning. Who cares whose line Connor is on?
You know, I'm going to say that you guys are going to laugh at me probably because we always talk about line combinations. I don't tweet a lot, but I'll usually tweet the combos at the morning skate. We have a sponsored segment on the Face-Off show where Bob does the line combinations. We have top line. But really, when you think about it, the line combinations are, I was going to say, like, they're not irrelevant. But what's, I mean, they change all the time, right? I mean, well, here's how they practiced. And then they took the morning skate the same way they practiced. So those have to be the lines. Those have to be the lines. 2 days in a row. Well, yeah, okay, they're down 2-0 10 minutes into the game and playing terrible. The line, the lights change. You know, the lines are only relevant if they're playing really well or winning. They usually stay the same for a while. And every coach shuffles the lines. You know, if you pay attention to what other teams do, they bench guys, limit ice time, promote guys. So, yeah, I just don't think... I don't know if, you know, 10 years from now we're going to say, oh, that was McDavid's line. You know, like, of all the people, that was the line he played on. You know, I just think that he's going to play with so many different people and get so many different combinations throughout a game, because you're always going to try to sneak him in there, just put him out there as much as possible. I don't know if at the end of his career Connor McDavid is going to be associated with just two wingers. I think he and Draisaitl will be linked if they both wind up playing all or most of their career with the Oilers, but I don't know if he'll be associated just with one line. Okay, that was some fun stuff. I tell you what, I got to punt here and bring Morley Scott onto the show for some combine talk. More on the Oilers. Zach Hyman had some very intelligent comments today, at least I thought they were. And we'll also preview the Oil Kings' final weekend of the regular season.
This is Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins on Edmonton Sports Leader 630 Chat.
All right, Alabama has caught up, but San Diego State shooting free throws, 67-64. San Diego State with 45.4 seconds left in the second half. So the top seed in the entire tournament on the ropes. Here, Morley Scott, play-by-play voice for your Edmonton Elks, checking in tonight. Hello, Morley.
Hey, Reed, how you doing?
I have a question for you.
I have an answer for you, I hope.
Well, I hope. It's a fun question that I've been getting some interesting responses from the listeners tonight. All right. So I want you to put together your ultimate Oilers forward line. So three forwards, but you're allowed to pick one from the five Stanley Cup era, one from 1991 to 2014, and one from the McDavid-Draisaitl era.
Hmm. And have to be positional players?
No, you can just put three forwards together. We'll assume that they're all smart enough to play center or wing.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, Well, that's tough.
Yeah, I know.
just off the top of my head, what was the second era you gave
me? So from 1991 to 2014, so kind of mediocrity and decade of darkness.
Yeah, okay. I would go Gretzky, Waite, and McDavid.
Okay. You're not the first person to suggest that. We had a Messier, Waite, and McDavid as well. Mm-hmm.
Someone thinks Messier is better than Gretzky. Is that what you're saying?
Somebody said that it is a line they think that would work better.
Okay, I got you. I got you.
We had a Semenko, Larac, and Gazdik.
Oh, nice.
Gonna have to tell Luke that next time he's on the show.
Dave Brown in there too. Yeah.
Dave Brown. Well, Dave Brown, he's got to be one of the best fighters of all time. And I know there were some great ones, but he was pretty tough.
Yeah, well, it's that legendary story, too, and I can't remember the particulars of it, but I know there was on the road, there was a fight somewhere, and he couldn't get involved or something, and somebody said something about him afterwards, and he had the line walking by the media the morning skate, and he said, don't be going for coffee in the first 5 minutes tonight, fellas, and whoever it was, I can't remember the particulars, but whoever it was, first shift on the ice in the first 5 minutes, there was a pummeling.
Right. There was a pummeling. That's good. All right. Yeah. What you guys were down at the combine today. Tell us a little bit about what you saw.
Oh, it's kind of neat. They've changed the combine this year a little bit for the Canadian Football League. And so far, and we'll know more in the next couple of days, because the real change is coming in the next couple of days. But so far, everybody seems to like it. They did the usual stuff, right? They did the measurements, where, you know, the height and the weight and the wingspan on the hands and all that stuff, and did the physicals and medicals the first day. The second day, they did all the individual drills. I was down yesterday morning and watched a little bit of the vertical jump and the bench press, which is the bench bench press to me is just fascinating to watch it. Some guys go, well, a couple of guys, global guys, they put up 29 reps of 225 pounds, which is just incredible to watch. But the guys are working hard doing that. And then they had the 40 and the three cone drill. Little do people know the three cone drill involves four cones, but that's another story for another time. And all those individual drills. Then today, they've added the new part. That was usually the end of it. The players would also do interviews with teams, and I know players were interviewing with teams last night, and they're doing it again tonight over at the hotel. So that's going on as well. But today, they started the team drills, and they're practicing as offense and defense. And today, when we were there, like the offense was on for an hour, and then the defense came on and worked out for an hour. And starting tomorrow, and they did one-on-ones today too, which is always fascinating to watch. Just those one-on-one battles between a DB and a receiver, and between a linebacker and stuff like that. So those are always great to watch. But they're going to do more team drills over the next couple of days, which they haven't done before. And the coaches are going to get an opportunity to watch these guys in a classroom setting, see how they pick up plays and see how they react with their teammates, because there's more to it than just how high can you jump and how fast can you run. And as Chris Jones said going into the combine, he said, we're not putting together a track team here, right? We don't need just the fastest guy. We also have to have guys who have football sense and know how to make football plays. You got to be able to run and jump, but you also got to be able to understand the game and do those things that a lot of people can't do that professional football players need to do. So they're getting a closer look at players in a football team atmosphere at the combine, which they've never done before. So it's usually like a 3-day event. This year it's a 5-day event going right through until Sunday. So some big changes, and from what I've heard so far, everybody seems to enjoy it, and an opportunity to, it gives the players an opportunity to show their skill set off in a couple of ways, individually and team wise, and it gives the GMs and coaches and scouts a chance to look at them in the two different ways. So it's so far it's been successful. We'll see if they keep it up moving forward.
All right, what's going on with the Elks this week tomorrow?
Dave and I are going to be live from the Commonwealth Fieldhouse tomorrow morning between 9 and 10 o'clock. We're going to talk with scheduled to appear, as they like to say. We're going to have CFL Commissioner Randy Ambrosi, Elks Assistant GM G. Roy Simon. We're going to talk to someone from the CFL about the combine and the setup this year. We're also going to have Gavin Cobb, who is a member of the Elks. Didn't play this year because he got hurt in the training camp in the preseason game. You'll remember he was the guy who was carted off when they had those back-to-back plays, when two guys
were carted off
on back-to-back plays. Gavin Cobb was one of them, missed the whole season, but he lit it up at the combine last year. So we're going to talk to him about what it's like to be a player at the combine, and we're hoping to bring in, looking to get in Eli Hettlinger as well from the Golden Bears, their quarterback, who's taking part in things as well. So full show between 9 and 10 o'clock tomorrow, live from the combine with myself and Dave Campbell.
Has Ambrosi not been talking more about Atlantic Canada again, which I found kind of surprising, because, like a lot of businesses, the league took some punches with the pandemic and not having a season and stuff like that. So
actually, I was talking to Randy a little bit today down at the combine, and we were talking about that, and I'm sure we'll bring it up on the show again tomorrow when we talk to him. But he was just talking about how much a 10th team, how many issues a 10th team will solve. It's going to cut down on the bye weeks. Right now, because you got 9 teams, one team's got to be off every week, right? So teams get 3 bye weeks, which is too many, really, when you think about it during a football season. And he said, now, if you get a 10th team in, you get one bye. Everybody gets one bye week during the football season, and they'll probably get it in the summer months. And then it'll allow 5 games a week for most weeks, which would be great for television, be great for different aspects of it. But it would also take it from a 21-week regular schedule to a 19-week regular schedule. So 21 minus 19 is 2. That means the Grey Cup would be 2 weeks earlier. So now you're in the first 10 days of November for the Grey Cup, which is a big difference between the last 10 days of November, especially on the prairies, right? Where, it could be cold, but there's a much better chance of having better weather. And the playoff games are now going to be in late October. And we've had some glorious days in October for some home games in the prairies, right? Particularly last year, we had just a fantastic day for a game here in October. So now those are going to be playoff games. So you're going to have better weather all around. And in my mind, better weather creates better games, and also, if it's cold out, people aren't coming, right? You're not going to sit in the stands for 3 hours when it's cold. So you get a chance to up the attendance as well.
All right, so 9 to 10 a.m. tomorrow for the Elks this week.
Yep, 9 to 10 with myself and Dave from the Commonwealth Fieldhouse. Looking forward to it. It'll be some grunting and groaning with some football players in the background, too. So I'm looking forward to that.
All right. Morley, thanks for hopping on, man. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Anytime, Rito. Have a good weekend, man.
Morley Scott, play-by-play voice of your Edmonton Elks. And, of course, you get him doing sports every day on this morning with Jay Lynn and Daryl. Yeah, San Diego State knocks off Alabama. How about that? Another upset in this NCAA tournament. Final two games of the season coming up for the Edmonton Oil Kings. We'll tell you what to look for there and a little bit more on the Oilers. We'll finally get to Zach Hyman's comments on Pride Night as well. It's Inside Sports on Chet.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.